We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gal.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that. In my
welcome in. Happy Friday night. I'm David Gal, the boss, and next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. Carla, welcome in. How are you?
I am much better than last Friday night, which saw my Trojans down in the basement and out of the college football playoffs.
But yeah, that surprised me. I thought they were going to win that conference championship game, fit into the Final Four, and we were going to see the Trojans reestablish the Pac-12 in the college football playoffs.
Okay, you want to know my silver lining? They're way ahead of schedule. Last year at this time, they were 4-8 with a Clay Helton-led team. He's fired. So even though we were sitting there with that CFP for the taking, they're way ahead of schedule. They just have to learn how to win the big game.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley's arrival and Caleb Williams coming with him certainly position them for a great year this year. And Caleb Williams may be on his way to a Heisman Trophy. It'll be very interesting to see. We've got a lot to unpack on the show.
We've got a big show today. I'm excited.
Very exciting time. We're going to figure out where OBJ is going to go. We're going to figure out where some Major League Baseball free agents will land. And we'll hear from Matt Pauley, who is
at the winter meetings
with the owners and got a firsthand look at all the deliberations there. That'll be fun to do. And then Ryan Leaf is going to join us and talk a little college football later in the show. We always enjoy hearing from Ryan.
And then we've got Lance Zierlein. Can't forget that in hour two.
In hour two, we'll have Lance Zierlein. Of course, Lance writes for NFL.com. He's an NFL draft expert. He's also a show host on KFNC Houston. So he's got lots of insights across the NFL and a lot of insights on the coming class coming into the draft of the NFL. I'm really intrigued to see how he views this quarterback class. Most people think Bryce Young's at the top, but there's some other contenders, and it'll be fun to hear from Lance.
And he does some great impersonations, so maybe if we catch him on a good night, we'll get one.
Lance is multi-talented.
Yes, he is.
So we'll have lots to cover on that front. When we come back, though, I do want to look at OBJ because he's now made the rounds. He's done his visits with the Bills, with the Giants, and with the Cowboys. And the thought was he'd be signed perhaps this week, but his fate sort of hanging in the balance. Not sure if he's really ready. So we'll look at OBJ's situation and the recent comments out of his visit with Dallas. That will be up next when we return here on the Boss and the Gloss Sports Map Radio.
Football Friday with the Boss and the Gloss continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gal and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. And OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., has been making the rounds. He's visited the Bills. He's visited the Giants. And this week earlier, he was visiting with the Cowboys. And the comments coming out of the Cowboys is they're a little concerned he may not be ready, that OBJ may not be ready. And really, that shouldn't surprise anybody. I mean, this is an ACL tear. It's his second one.
That happened in February.
And the recovery time can often be up to a year. There's certainly players that have come back faster. I mean, Wes Welker, I think, came back in 7 months and played very well after 7 months. So the timeline to recovery is different by person. But there should be no presumption that OBJ could step on the field for a new team and make an impact in the short term.
No, I agree. I totally agree with you. But what do you think as a Cowboys fan is what I want to know. Do you want him there? Because let's say he's not going to be a contributor, which I believe is true for this season ending in early 2023. Do you want to ink him now and have him as a Dallas Cowboys fan for the 2023 season? Do you trust that and want that?
No, I think the only argument for signing him now would be is if you thought you could get real impact this year, if he were sort of a last piece to put the Cowboys over the top. But I don't think that's happening. It just doesn't look like it. I mean, he's not running for teams right now in these workouts.
No, he's not working out with them, which
is interesting. And the fact that he's not doing a workout is a real tell. I mean, maybe he will be in 4 weeks, but the season's running out of time here on us. And so, no, I wouldn't sign him unless I really believed he could make a mark this year, which seemed very doubtful. Looking at until next year, I mean, there's going to be so much player movement and player development and player drafting. To sign him today for the prospect of next year just seems too early. If he's a next year thing, let's deal with him in the offseason would be my picture, of my position if I were running an NFL team right now.
Well, I agree with you completely. I don't think there's any rush to sign him. I really don't, unless you think this is a piece that we really need and I want to get ahead of anyone else. But like the Giants, I think that's interesting. He wanted out of there so badly. Why would they be talking to him again? What did he do for them? He was an ESPN highlight reel, and then he was a lot of drama. He did the dog going to the bathroom situation. He wanted out of there. It was a big, ugly thing. Why would the Giants be talking to him again? I'm confused.
I cannot explain that one to you, and would add that one of the reasons I would be reluctant to sign him now, particularly when he may not be physically 100%, is the expectation of how you're supposed to use him and the expectation on him of how he's supposed to perform will greatly exceed the likely reality that you'll get. And that will create problems, particularly when you think about a team like the Cowboys. The signing of OBJ by the Cowboys would be big headline news. Everyone would rave about it. I mean, even just the visit got all this attention.
Sure, they were courtside at the Mavericks game.
When he went to visit the Buffalo Bills, nobody really talked about, he's visiting the Bills, but everybody knew it, but it wasn't followed every step of the way. You bring OBJ into the Cowboys, and there's a real risk it'll be a distraction, and if he doesn't perform at this high level, it will be all these questions. Is it the Cowboys don't know how to use him right? I mean, Sean McVay got the most out of OBJ, and the Cowboys don't know what to do with him. All those sort of stupid headlines that would come out. I just think OBJ's not ready. I mean, if he's not working out for teams, let's put it the other way. If you were 100% and you had your full powers back, you would go out and show everyone. You would work out, and you'd get yourself a big contract right now that lasts through next year. You'd be able to double it up. And he's just not there. There's a reason he's not running. And therefore, Cowboys certainly should run away. Giants, they've had their history. I don't know why they'd want him.
Oh, gosh.
And then the Bills, sure, that's a team that is poised for a Super Bowl run, short of the Von Miller injury this week. Awful news that he's torn his ACL, and so that's a real setback for the Bills. But no, obviously, it would be a contending team that would want to look at adding a piece to help them with the stretch, but that apparently is not OBJ at this point. Maybe he'll get his physical body ready over the next few weeks, but time will have to tell on that one.
Well, I look at Dallas. They put 54 points in. Now, it was up against the Colts, for sure, but they had a 33-point fourth quarter. I'm really not that worried about Dallas and feeling like they have missing pieces.
Yep.
I think they're doing just great. They just happen to be in the same division with the Eagles. So it's going to be a fight to the finish, but it's exciting. And I think Dallas is playing some great football.
They are. And they are 9-3. So when Stephen A. Smith mouths off, the Cowboys are idiots for not signing OBJ. The Cowboys are going nowhere without OBJ. I just don't understand the basis.
What do you expect from Stephen A.?
That he just can't help himself but make a point. I actually think if OBJ had signed with the Cowboys, he probably would have said, the Cowboys overpaid. What are they
How
thinking?
How could you sign someone who's not even running for you right now?
Yes. He'd just take the opposite side. That's Stephen A. But no, I think the Cowboys are well positioned for the stretch run. I mean, look, in the NFC right now, with Jimmy G injured, the 49ers are not the same team. Now, maybe Jimmy G will come back sometime in the playoffs.
Well, he's out for about 7 weeks at best.
So maybe he comes back in a divisional round game or the NFC Championship game, but that's after a 7-week layoff. The 49ers are not the same team on paper that they were a week ago with this injury. So then when you look at the NFC...
However, that Brock Purdy's got some swagger. He's looking Purdy on Sunday, let me tell you.
Well, I want to come back to that. Can Purdy look that Purdy over a sustained run? And I just don't think it's realistic. I mean, great showing, and love his poise and his moxie
his
and all that.
His moxie is amazing.
But the 49ers are not the same team, which leaves you in the NFC probably with Eagles, Cowboys, Vikings. And if Tom Brady pulls another miracle, maybe the Buccaneers. But look, there are only two or three teams there at the NFC, and the Cowboys are one of them. So they're really well poised, and I think it's going to be an intriguing stretch run.
I agree with you.
I also want to shift gears, though, and talk to you about Baker Mayfield, who, of course, asked for his release from the Panthers.
Who's had his number from the get-go? Want to be clear.
From the get-go, you've never been in Baker's camp. You've always said he would be a bust. He was taken number one overall, which just blew my mind.
Mine too.
And thus far, things are not good. He passed through waivers. No team picked him except for one. It was the Rams under the legendary great quarterback whisperer, Sean McVay. And so now Baker Mayfield is in the quarterback room in L.A. And Matt Stafford, maybe toward the end of his career, some of his injuries have really mounted up, and he's not a young guy anymore. He's obviously out for the rest of this year. What kind of role do you think Baker Mayfield will have with the Los Angeles Rams?
I think that is a That's a question of the week. But I have an answer for you. Are you surprised?
Tell me.
Okay. I mean, think about this. They were thrilled to get him out of Cleveland. Couldn't wait for him to leave. He goes to Carolina, and he's backing up, I mean, Sam Darnold. And, well, no, he was not backing up Sam Darnold. He came in as the starter. He won that starting job. He lost it to P.J. Walker. Now, I love me some P.J. Walker. He is so much fun. But it's P.J. Walker. Let's not lose that. And then they brought in Sam Darnold, and he hit an 18.2. Baker Mayfield had an 18.2 QBR leaving Carolina. So the Rams pick him up. I saw an interview with the Rams OC, Liam Cohn, asking, like, this is so surprising. What was this pickup? What were you looking for?
What do you hope to get out of Baker Mayfield now?
You ready for this quote?
Tell me.
We needed to get someone in here to develop competitive nature in this room. You just won a Super Bowl. How much more competitive nature do you need? Then they asked him, Liam, the same question of Sean McVay, like, how's he going to fit into McVay's offense? He says, well, Sean met Baker during the draft process and really likes him as a dude. Well, there we have it.
That's the answer.
I mean, football minds prevail.
There they win it.
Can you even? I'm sorry. Do you think this is the answer for the Rams?
No, but the interesting thing is they are on the cusp of being in a really bad spot.
They share the same record as the Denver Broncos.
Well, so this year is a disaster. Oh. And interestingly, of course, their number one overall pick this year was traded to Detroit. Detroit has it. And the irony is that this year, so the Lions have two picks. It looks like the Rams pick will be the much higher pick than the Lions pick. I mean, right now, I think the Rams pick would be a top five pick. The Lions pick is a top 15 pick. But the Lions have that bounty. And when you think about the Rams looking ahead, Matt Stafford's future is very uncertain. He's been beat up with injuries. Some of them are very serious in nature. He's only had one season that he performed at a high level. I'm not sure the Rams have their go-forward quarterback.
And I said that, too. I said, my goodness, last year, you're right, he had a phenomenal season. But what about the previous 14 in Detroit?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing the bloom is off the rose a bit now. And you're right. I mean, there's injuries, and he's had some really significant ones. But, yeah, I've got a question mark on him, too.
So they're trying to accumulate talent in that quarterback room, but Baker Mayfield's just not going to be the answer.
Maybe I could have an 18 QBR, so I don't know if that's accumulating talent.
I think you sell yourself short. I think you're at least a 37.
Okay.
You're on your way.
Thank you. Please don't be talking about my measurements. But here's another thought, too. Do you think, so if they bring in Mayfield, and he's on the cheap, like $1.7 million, I think they pick up the rest
of that.
Sure,
very little left on that contract for the rest of the season.
Very little. And let's say he goes elsewhere. Then does a compensatory pick come to the Rams? Maybe that's another spin they're doing, because this is a head-scratching move, but I guess it's better than who do they have? Perkins will be stepping up for them that played at – where did Perkins play?
I can't tell you. I don't think he's the answer in that quarterback
room
either.
See, I don't know. That should tell you.
Rams are headed to nowhere fast and no draft capital reward for their poor record. So that'll be intriguing to see that unfold in that room. I remember a year or two ago when the Rams were trading away draft picks to accumulate any possible talent they could acquire from guys like Jalen Ramsey to come over, Matt Stafford to come over. There was always this thought it was a win now and then fall off later. And I think the fall off has arrived.
Okay, well, here's where Bryce Perkins played. Arizona State, Arizona Western, and Virginia. So that's probably why we didn't know Bryce Perkins. But yeah. Hey, you know what? He's getting the reins next man up. Let's see what he can do.
Big name quarterbacks. They've got him. We'll see. Baker Mayfield, though, right now.
He'll bring interest.
I think what we've seen is his physical talent isn't that extraordinary. He's not that tall. His arm strength is not that good. His mobility is average at best.
But he wins the press conference.
He may win the press conference, but he hasn't won many games in a long time now. Former Heisman Trophy winner, which is just amazing. I think sometimes this shows off how good a coach Lincoln Riley is, because he took a guy without a lot of physical talent and turned him into a really high performer at Oklahoma.
Agreed. Cliff Kingsbury could not do that at Tech, which is why he came to OU.
All right, we'll be right back. And when we come back, we'll be talking Major League Baseball free agents. We'll have Matt Pauley join us. He has been at the winter meetings. Matt Pauley joining us up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Matt Pauley. He is a host on KMOX Sports in St. Louis, and he was on site this past week at the baseball winter meetings. Matt, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We are doing well and would love to get your impressions of all the doings down in Laguna Beach at the baseball winter meetings.
Yeah, it's been it has been something for sure. You know, some of these deals that have come down. The first big one was Trey Turner, 11 years for Turner. That's what the $300 million is a lot of money. But I think the thing that jumped out at everybody was the fact that he got 11 years, and everybody was waiting on Aaron Judge. And man, it really felt like he was going to end up leaving the Yankees and going to the San Francisco Giants. And then at the last second, he makes the decision to go ahead and stay with the Yankees. And obviously, there's been a number of other moves as well. You know, I cover the Cardinals, and they've signed Wilson Contreras to be their catcher, and that's a big signing as well.
Wow, that is big.
Yeah, it's just been, there's a lot going on, and this is good for baseball because last year there was no winter meetings because of the labor issue, and then the 2 years before that, due to COVID, there was no winter meetings. So it's just been an opportunity for the spotlight to be on the sport of baseball, which I think is a really important thing.
We're talking to Matt Pauley, who was at the winter meetings. Would love to ask you, do you feel, is there a common perception that the Yankees overpaid for Aaron Judge?
I don't think so, no. And maybe if it was a different team, we'd be talking about something different. But I think the perception is that the Yankees have as much money as they need to spend, and Aaron Judge is arguably the best hitter in baseball. So whatever it's going to take to get him to come back, that's what it's going to take. So that has not been the narrative in California. I don't think people feel like they overspent. I think they spent what they needed to keep him in pinstripes.
Let me ask you this, Matt, on the subject of Judge. I mean, obviously, he bet on himself. You know, the Yankees offered him in April $213 million over 7 years. He said no, and bet on himself, which clearly worked out to be great. You know, sadly, the Yankees did leak that out, which I think Aaron Judge felt like that was a way to turn the media and fans against him, but obviously won them over. Now, I think this to me smells more like a Hal Steinbrenner move than a Brian Cashman move. And I think Hal Steinbrenner said, I'm not going to have this blood on my hands. What do you want? I'm going to do it. And did it. And what do you think? Do you think there, I mean, it's a 70% increase from what he was offered in April. And I think that's what San Francisco was in the market to give him too. Was there any way under Steinbrenner that he was not going to be a Yankee this year?
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make. I think there was a possibility. I don't think it was just guaranteed that he was going to be back with the Yankees no matter what. I think the Giants and even the Padres had a legitimate opportunity for him. But the point that you're making that maybe Steinbrenner got involved, because there have been some rumblings out there that maybe he and Brian Cashman, Aaron Judge being, that he and Brian Cashman have not seen eye to eye on everything. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, then you as an owner, if you put the priority that you want a player to continue to play for you, then you go get involved. And it's your right. You own the team. You can go do whatever you want to do. So I don't think that what you said is crazy at all. I'll tell you kind of a funny story, too, about this. So it was on Tuesday. I've got a friend who works in the industry kind of on the IT side, and he helps put together presentations for teams when they're pitching players and things like that. And he came up to me on Tuesday, and he said, Aaron Judge is on his way to San Diego, and he's going to re-sign with the Yankees. And he said, he can't tell anybody that, but that's what I'm hearing. Mm. And about 15, 20 minutes later, the tweet comes out from John Heyman that says, Judge is going to sign with the San Francisco Giants. And my first thought was, okay, well, my buddy didn't even know what he was talking about. And then all of a sudden we wake up on Wednesday morning, and indeed, Judge had flown to San Diego. He'd met with the Padres. He'd met with some other teams. He'd flown back out, and he agreed to the deal. So my guy knew exactly what he was talking about. But it's just, that's how dynamic the winter meetings can be, that things can change so very quickly at any given moment.
And keep that source, Matt. That's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking to Matt Pauley. He hosts a show called The Sports Open Line on 1120 AM and 98.7 FM KMOX Sports in St. Louis. Okay, let's talk about the shortstop market because there's some big names still out there. Who's the most attractive? Is Correa the next to fall?
I don't know who the next fall is, but I do think Correa is the most attractive. You're looking at Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, and Dansby Swanson. And if I had to sign those guys in any order, that's the order I would go with. Correa, from both an offensive and defensive standpoint, he's a high-level player, and he can do a lot of things for you, and he continues to be in his prime. I think Bogaerts comes in after that. There seems to be some rumblings around here, though, that Bogaerts might be the next guy to sign his deal. I'm curious about him because he was offered a deal in Boston last year, and not only did he say no, he made it seem like he was offended by the contract offer. So when you've got that kind of attitude, then maybe sometimes you hold out for too much and you overplay your hand a little bit, and it takes a while for you to sign a deal, and you end up signing a lesser deal than you had initially. So, and you know, Dansby Swanson is a nice shortstop. He's not a, if he was, look at the Atlanta Braves track record. Every young player that the Braves prioritize, they get signed to long-term deals. The fact that, and I know they had an offer out to Swanson that he didn't take, but the fact that they allowed Swanson even to get to free agency, to me, that's a little bit of an indictment on who he is as a ball player. He's a nice shortstop, but he's to me, he is clearly the fourth of the four that have been available, and obviously Turner's not available anymore because he signed with the Phillies.
Matt, where do you see, what are you hearing about Carlos Correa? Where do you think he's going to land? We're here in Houston. We love the guy. We're sad he's gone. Obviously, next man up in Jeremy Pena, that passing of the torch was better than Houston could have ever imagined. But where do you see Carlos Correa? What are you hearing?
I wish I could answer your question with some sort of secure, you know, where I would know what was going on. I don't know. Like, basically, the bottom line is I don't know. There's so many moving parts out here right now. If you would have asked me about, you know, again, going back to the Cardinals, if you would have asked me 2 days ago who the Cardinals were going to end up bringing in, I would have said, I would probably put Contreras third on the list. I would have said Sean Murphy and then even a Christian Vasquez before a Contreras and maybe even those Toronto guys as well. There's teams that need them, and I just think it's going to continue to play out in a way that we're going to be somewhat surprised when these guys sign their deals. I don't think people thought that Turner was going to end up with the Philadelphia Phillies. That was not something that was expected, especially again on that 11-year deal. So I'm not trying to not answer your question.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that there's
so many landing spots for these players, and everything continues to move in a really dynamic way.
You know, Trey Turner signing with Philadelphia, yes, it was a total surprise. I agree with you. 11-year, $300 million deal with a no-trade clause. Philly this past year soars past the luxury tax barrier for the first time ever, and they're on top to repeat again in this next season in 2023, and it'll be the most expensive team the franchise has ever fielded. And I think that's interesting to me. Are they going for broke because they were that close this past year? I don't know. I mean, I think this is just fascinating because that luxury tax barrier is that's steep.
Yeah, I think there's two things going on here. First off, Dave Dombrowski is really good at spending other people's money. That's the first thing.
Always has
David
been.
David knows he's a longstanding Red Sox fan, so there we go.
The second thing is the old adage in sports. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So here you are, the Phillies. You're coming off a trip to the World Series, and there are a lot of teams and a lot of general managers / president of baseball operations who would feel like, okay, the group that we took to the World Series, we can kind of run it back. Well, historically, you go look at the teams that run it back, they don't run it back. They take a step back. So, plus that division is so tough. I mean, the Mets with Steve Cohen as their owner, they're just going to spend and spend and spend and spend. And we already talked about the Atlanta Braves and how they lock up their young players. That division is turning into clearly the best division in baseball with the most high-end talent. So if you're the Philadelphia Phillies and you want to give yourself a chance to repeat as National League champions, have to go spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's Matt Pauly. You can hear him on KMOX in St. Louis. Matt, really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Take care.
It's The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Ryan Leaf, college football analyst for ESPN. Ryan, the last time we saw you, I think it was an all-you-could-eat steakhouse, and you got your money's worth.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, they kept bringing more and more and more, and Ryan won the award for the most product consumed that night. You did well by us all.
Hey, if it's free, it's me, David. I'm telling you right now, okay? And so my wife and I were like, we had never really been to a Brazilian steakhouse where we could just have, you know, meat being bought out to you over and over. And so, yeah, we enjoyed ourselves that night very much so, thanks.
Well, and also, there's a lot of real estate between you and your bride. You are a tall couple, so there's a lot to fill up. So we'll give you that, too.
Yeah, there is. And I can't even imagine what our grocery bill is going to be for the next 15 years with our son, who's going to be about 6'9". So, yeah, we're figuring that out, too.
Wow.
That's fantastic. Well, let's dive right in. And one topic we wanted to be sure to hit, you know, our friend here, Carla, USC Trojan. And a week ago, Friday night, we were all excited. The Trojans were positioned to get into the college football playoff. They did not prevail over Utah. What's the state of USC now? How do you evaluate that loss and the outlook for Lincoln Riley?
Well, I mean, it was an incredible year for a team that was 4-8 the year before. And Lincoln Riley comes in and really transfers that culture into something really special. You know, it helps when you have somebody like Caleb Williams that is brought to the table. He was and could be the Heisman Trophy winner come this weekend. So I expected them to play well. I still thought Utah was going to be the better team simply because they were better special teams, better defense, and you know, capable offensively. They just had more of a team that was built to win a championship like that. And that's exactly what they did, right? They took away what USC did best all year defensively, and that was get turnovers. They didn't turn over but the one time, and they were incredibly physical up front, pushed those linebackers around, made those safeties have to cover up and down the field against those big tight ends. And then when Caleb Williams kind of, you know, injured his hamstring a little bit, he became more one-dimensional. Not that I think that had a huge effect on the game.
Right.
I think it had a partial effect, but they dominated in the second half. Just a little more physical, better defensive football team. And they had every goal right there in front of them. They wanted to be Pac-12 champs again. They wanted a chance to be Rose Bowl champions after losing to Ohio State last year. Now they get that opportunity January 2nd against Penn State. So I thought it was a really good victory for Utah. It's a good building block for USC, and Lincoln's really going to have kind of maybe a, you know, come to Jesus conversation with Alex Grinch this offseason about how they can be better defensively, because the defense looked very similar to a lot of the defenses that Lincoln had at Oklahoma during his tenure there, which was a big reason why they never ultimately got past this national semifinal in the college football playoff.
Ryan, I could not agree with you more, because I'm going to focus on the moving forward part, but I'm watching that game on Friday night, and by the end of that game, I'm like, hang on. This is a USC defense that has allowed 91 points in two meetings against Utah. And Alex Grinch, I didn't love him in the Big 12 when he was at OU. And in the Big 12, nobody plays defense. And that, you are spot on. That is exactly what held the Sooners back then. I call him the Grinch that stole Christmas. Christmas is gone now for Trojans fans. And honestly, Alex Grinch needs to be gone. He didn't prove himself in the Big 12 level. It's certainly not happening. And I think these two contests against Utah, 91 points. Do you think that Lincoln Riley has the... Do you think he's going to do something like that? Or do you think he gives him another chance? Because you're right, they're ahead of schedule.
I do think he gives him another chance. I think Alex Grinch is a very good head coach. I do. And it's rare to be able to find a guy that can get his players to fly to the football like he does to get turnovers. I mean, I've never seen a coach be able to get and win the turnover margin in which he has. The problem with USC and their defense is they haven't had the players, right? They're undersized.
Right.
They're not as physical. Same thing at Oklahoma. When you have a superpowered offense, it's weird. When you go and recruit, you're generally recruiting more towards the offensive side of the football, and therefore the defensive side becomes a little less efficient. The work that he did at Washington State under Mike Leach, when you're coaching against the Mike Leach team as a defensive coordinator on said team, being able to find a way to be dominant on defense and do those types of things when you are asked to be on the field for, you know, predominantly the majority of the game, mm-hmm. I think it's really impressive. So I just expect them to hit the portal hard, go out and recruit really hard on the defensive side of the football, find some horses that Alex Grinch can do some really interesting things with, because I do think he's a good coach. I just don't know if they didn't have the physicality, the guys up front, to make a difference on Friday night.
We're talking to Ryan Leaf. He's an ESPN college football analyst. And I want to shift gears and ask you about Deion Sanders taking the Colorado job. What's your take on Coach Prime and the kind of impact he'll have there?
Well, I like Deion. I think he understands where college football is at right now in terms of the transfer portal, NIL, things of that nature. He went to a historically black college and university to coach at Jackson State, got that team turned around immediately, was able to bring in some really great players. And now wants a shot at the Power Five. Unfortunately, he's going to a program that's bad, right? I mean, they won
really bad
one game. Well, they won one game a year ago. They don't have the brand recognition. Let's say that USC won four games a year ago. Lincoln Riley comes in, you know, hits the portal, does a great job in recruiting, and then, you know, they go into a position where they win 11 games, right? So I don't believe that Colorado can do that, especially without the influx of NIL money that's coming out everywhere else. So this will be interesting. It's going to be a circus until the first game of next year, which will be versus the national semifinalists and the TCU Horned Frogs in Fort Worth to open the season for Colorado. So it's going to be interesting what that's going to look like over the next throughout this offseason and everything. It's going to be a great story until the games are played, and then we'll see, because everybody's hyped when you get a new head coach and what it can be, and he's going to bring a lot of attention to Colorado right away, and I do think he's going to get some good players. I just don't know if they're going to be good enough in a conference that produced six teams that won 9-plus games this year, which was really impressive.
It was so impressive, and, you know, you're right. They are the most beleaguered team in the Pac-12 for sure. I mean, they have two winning seasons in the last 17 years. Ryan, let me ask you about the Heisman situation that we're going to find out about Saturday night, who's who. I want to ask you a little bit about Caleb Williams at USC. I mean, obviously, currently Las Vegas has him as a front runner and everything else. Is there any bias with the voters? The whole situation of the profanities he had on his fingernails in the Utah game and then doing the Heisman pose with Notre Dame. Did any of that have anything to do with the voting, and could that hurt him?
I'm sure there's going to be some people that are turned off by it. I mean, I'd hate for that to be the case. Kids are going to be kids. Kids do stupid things sometimes. I don't think it is. I think he was the best player in college football this year, if you watched him at any point.
Yeah.
And as you can clearly see, once he got injured, USC became a different-looking team, and how he carried that team all year long. So I hope he still is the recipient of it. I think he's deserving of it. I do think that it should have been opened up to more than four guys to come, though. I really do. I think a few guys got snubbed. I think Hendon Hooker.
Oh, I agree.
Michael Penix Jr., as well as maybe Blake Corum. I think all three of those guys really were a huge influence on their team. And people don't get how important it is to go to New York. I got an opportunity to do that, to represent your university, you know, your family, everybody in that moment. 25 years ago, I got to experience that. It's the coolest thing, and I think those other three players were every bit as deserving as the four that are invited.
We're talking to Ryan Leaf. He's also a show host. In addition to ESPN College Football Analyst, he's a show host on Sirius XM. Ryan, let's look at the college football playoff matchups. What's your breakdown of the two semifinal games?
I'm really surprised to see the Ohio State-Georgia game considered so closely by Vegas. I think it's -6.5 points right now, and I think that Georgia is easily a double-digit favorite in this football game. So if any of you are into that type of thing, I'd run out there right now and grab those 6.5 points and just run away, because Georgia is the best football team in the country. This would have been a great year for the BCS to come back into play. I love that TCU gets an opportunity, but, you know, bottom line, Michigan and Georgia are the best teams in the country, and they're most likely going to play for the national championship. Georgia is just their roster is too good. They have arguably the best wide receiver, and he happens to play 10 tight ends for Georgia in this game, and that's against even Marvin Harrison Jr. So it says a lot. Brock Bowers is a special, special player. They're really good. They're playing really great on offense, and the worst thing that could have happened to Ohio State is LSU putting up 500 yards of total offense against that great defense. They are going to be primed. They are going to be ready, and Georgia's going to walk all over the Buckeyes come to the national semifinal.
I want to ask you about the quarterbacks. As a former NFL quarterback, who among the quarterbacks this year coming out of college do you think will go number one in the NFL draft? I mean, we're sitting here in Houston. Texans have the number one overall pick as we sit today. Is Bryce Young the automatic, or would we see a C.J. Stroud or somebody else jump into that top spot?
I mean, I think Bryce Young's in that scenario. I do think that if Michael Penix Jr. had come out, I do think he would have been at or near the top. I mean, he was exceptional this year. Mm-hmm. He has arm strength. He has durability. After being injured a lot during his career, he really showcased that this year and got the ball out quick. But he chose to come back to the University of Washington next year for another year, which I thought was incredibly, incredibly interesting. And so I would say that Bryce Young is probably the guy. A little undersized. Mm-hmm. But I think he kind of falls in the vein of Deshaun Watson, right? A guy that Houston had drafted and had hoped for a bunch of amazing years, led the team in passing, or led the NFL in passing a couple of years ago. So I think that's kind of in the vein of what they're trying to make work and make go. And I think he's an exceptional young quarterback. It's just a matter of, you know, does he go to a team that helps blossom that, or does he go to a team that's really bad, like the Texans are right now? And is he not heard from again? Do people look at him differently, a la Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville? Right, it's a big part of that. They got to improve all around. I do think they have some young, good defensive players, but they got to get better on the offensive side of the football, especially at the skill positions.
Ryan, sticking with the offensive side of the football, if Bryce Young or whoever it is goes, well, actually, I want to talk to you about Bryce Young specifically, because at Alabama, their offense has not looked the same the last two seasons. You know, they lost in the national championship game. This year, they're on the outside looking into the college football playoffs. And yes, there's been some injury with Bryce Young here and there, but it's really not his talent. How much of this offensive drop-off we've seen with Alabama, has to do in the hands of Bill O'Brien? And do you see him staying with Nick Saban? Do you see him having a chance in college or professional? Or do you think, enough seen, this guy is not, he's not good at developing quarterbacks like he says that he is? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, he just coached the Heisman Trophy winner a year ago, and then the best quarterback in all of college football this year. So I don't think that, I think that's probably a pretty strong assessment. I mean, he developed a pretty darn good one, right? You know, a guy that, like I said, won the Heisman Trophy, played for the national championship, and very easily, if he would have had better wide receivers this year, could have been in the college football playoff once again, you know. So I thought it was really impressive in what he was able to do. There's another guy, too, that, you know, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner doesn't get invited back either, too. That's probably a conversation that should have been had, too, that a lot of people aren't having. So I think he's great at what he does. There's a reason why Nick Saban, who's the best in the business, has him as his offensive coordinator. But like every year, Nick's going to evaluate how the season went, and he's going to have an answer to try to be better and not be in a situation where he doesn't make it back to the college football playoff. And so, you know, Bill O'Brien could be a conversation to be had, but I don't think so in terms of what they had offensively at the wide receiver position. That's where they've always been so good over the last mm-hmm. 5 years, and just turning it over. And this year they just weren't as good on the skill position and left Bryce Young to do a lot more, as well as Gibbs running the football.
He's Ryan Leaf. Ryan, really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
You bet. I want to say something, too. I'm going to be spending a lot of time in Houston. I just signed a deal with the Manager Clinic there locally to do my work around substance use and mental illness, and working with them as an ambassador. So I'm going to be spending a lot of time in Houston, and I'm looking forward to becoming a little bit part of that community. Probably four or five times a year I'll be coming down. So excited for that. I'm going to really enjoy Houston and being part of that group.
Well, that's great to hear. We love to have you in Houston, and the Manager Clinic is an outstanding facility and really making a mark in many people's lives. So we look forward to your impact there. Ryan, again, thanks so much for being with us.
You bet. Thank you.
Take care.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it was great to have Ryan Leaf here on the show. Ryan is always insightful about college football, although it's interesting, we rarely disagree with his insights. But right. We did disagree about Bill O'Brien. And of course, if you heard him, he noted that Bill O'Brien has been coaching Bryce Young and has been an offensive coordinator for a great head coach of Nick Saban. And of course, he was a head coach an offensive coordinator for Bill Belichick with the Patriots. But sitting in Houston, Texas, watching what happened with Bill O'Brien as a head coach of the Texans, it's hard for anyone in Houston to have a positive vibe about Bill O'Brien.
Exactly. And the only reason there were winning seasons is because of Deshaun Watson. And I know Texans fans don't want to hear that, but that's the reality of it. And this is where Bill O'Brien's offensive mind is. You can Google War Room Texans Draft 2017. Deshaun Watson was Rick Smith's parting gift to the organization. And when he was drafted at 12, when they made the trade to get him at 12, you can see Bill O'Brien and his little group of people looking like someone just fed them liver. He didn't want him. And that's the only losing season they had with Deshaun was when he went 4-12 and had torn his ACL the second or third game. So let me tell you, Bill O'Brien is not, to me,
quarterback whisperer.
I don't know.
You don't see it that way?
You're right. I think Ryan Leaf is brilliant. I agree with most everything he says. I think he's drinking the Bill O'Brien Kool-Aid.
Because every time we get Ryan on, he's always exceptional.
But always.
We both disagreed with him on this one point. Mm-hmm. However, I think if you took a poll of most of the universe of football, Bill O'Brien is going to get rehabilitated by his time under Nick Saban and the success of Bryce
Kiffin
Young.
Kiffin and Sarkisian and everyone else has done already.
And so I think next year when we project ahead, where will Bill O'Brien be? Well, there are whispers that he'll be the offensive coordinator for New England. He'll return back to Bill Belichick and try to develop Mac Jones. Or that he will land a head coaching job at a prominent college football program. And that would be the complete rehab of Bill O'Brien after the Texans debacle.
Yeah, well, we'll just wait and see. I don't have a lot of faith. I've been in Houston too long. It was painful.
All right, hour number one of the books. We'll be right back, Nick.